Since the AIDS epidemic began in the early 80s, doctors the world over have been trying to find ways to cure or prevent the disease. In 2012, 3 decades after the official start of the epidemic, the FDA approved the first drug ever to help prevent HIV for people at a high risk of transmission. It's called Truvada, also known as PrEP, and it's said to be over 90% effective. Now, 2 years after the drug's release onto the market, its uptake has been slow. It's been the subject of some debate within the HIV prevention community and the gay communities. Some worry that widespread use of Truvada will undo the work public health organizations have done to encourage condom use. Use of the drug has also been stigmatized, with president of the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, Michael Weinstein, calling it a party drug, and at $13,000 a year, it's difficult to pay for. Here with us now to talk about the role Truvada is playing here in Wisconsin and around the country, we have Nick Olson, Director of Clinical Pharmacy at the AIDS Resource Center of Wisconsin. Nick, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
So what is the AIDS Resource Center of Wisconsin's stance on using this medication, Truvada, as a preventative for HIV?
Well, I think that the evidence that's out there to support the use of Truvada as a prevention mechanism for HIV infection, it's overwhelming. I mean, if you look at the studies, there's several robust ones out there. I mean, some of them go as high as a 92% effective rate. But one of the things that I think is really important to note about that is in all of these studies and in looking at the CDC's guidance for how to utilize this particular medication as a prevention mechanism, it's part of a comprehensive transmission prevention program where they're talking about safe sex practices and reduction of risky behaviors as far as transmission goes, from injection drug use to different styles of sexual practice. And so I guess the AIDS Research Center of Wisconsin stance on this is that this is an effective tool, but it's just one tool in the toolbox and needs to be part of this comprehensive sort of education program around HIV transmission prevention.
So the message you're hoping is not out there is this is a magic bullet. Don't worry about anything else.
No, that's certainly not the message that we're trying to do. And I think, I mean, this phenomenon is no different than any other sort of issue as it relates to healthcare. I mean, I don't think anybody would think, well, now that there are cholesterol medications or high blood pressure medications out there, that people are going to stop taking, you know, watching their diet and stop exercising because they've got this magic pill. I think the same thing could be said about this sort of thing. Just because there is a pill that helps prevent HIV transmission, that's not, you can't separate that or carve it out from the other things that a person needs to do to protect themselves.
Now, as I understand it, this medication, this is not a vaccine we're talking about. How does this drug work for preventing HIV?
Right. So actually, Truvada has been around since about 2004, when it was actually approved to treat HIV in combination with other medications. And so the way this mechanism works, not to get too fancy with it, but basically it stops the HIV from being able to replicate once it's inside of your white blood cells. And so in essence, what the thought is that if we can prevent HIV from replicating once it gets inside your body, before it even gets to the white blood cells, to cause kind of this long-term infection issue, that the idea is to kind of stamp it out there. But as you can see, this is not a 100% complete prevention mechanism. So this does fail, you know, at worst 10% of the times, and at other times, if you don't take the medication, it drops into the 40 to 30% efficacy range.
Now, this has only been around as a preventative approved medication for a couple of years. Do we have numbers yet on how widely used this is here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, and I wish I had better utilization data for you. So there's a couple of, you know, the best access to this sort of stuff is from the pharmaceutical industry, and you know, best as we can tell, since about 2012-2013, they have defined only about 1,800 people who have filled prescriptions for the express consent of using it for HIV prevention. Now, there are some confounding factors here too. Truvada, it can be used to treat hepatitis B infection. It is used, you know, of course, to treat HIV infection. So it's really hard sometimes to tease out the data, but I think what is obvious is that, you know, the United States averages about, you know, 48 to 50,000 new HIV infections a year. If we can only find 1,700 people that are utilizing this, there's a discrepancy gap there that we need to close.
Well, and that's a huge question there. Why is that number small? Why has uptake been slow?
Again, there's multifactorial reasons. I think you alluded to it in your introduction. This is not an inexpensive medication. And a lot of times folks need to rely on third-party payers, insurances, Medicaids, Medicares of the world to help pay or to supplement the cost of this. And so if you're a third-party payer and you're looking at, you know, paying out $13,000 or $14,000 a year for this, you know, what's the turnaround? You know, there hasn't really been cost utilization analyses done to see what is the turn back. If I'm paying out $14,000, how much am I preventing an infection and what's the cost savings there? And then in addition to the cost piece, you're looking at, you know, this is a medication that, you know, patients should be engaging in discussions with their primary care providers about it. Unfortunately, because of the way that HIV is transmitted, it's when it has to do with sexual transmission or the use of injection drugs, I think it's taboo subjects. There's a comfort level of patients being able to talk to their primary care providers about it. And of course, I think we all know primary care providers, they're taxed in our healthcare society right now. They have lots of things that they need to worry about. There's lots of other care issues that are being layered onto them. And this is just one more thing that, you know, they have to concern themselves with. And it's one more thing that, quite frankly, some of them just aren't entirely comfortable in dealing with.
If you had to do some triage here and pick a community or a couple communities that you would hope would have access to this preventive medication, where would you start?
Yeah, right. So, I mean, I think if you look that, you got to follow the HIV epidemiologic trends. And right now in the United States, there is the category of individuals or the demographic of individuals who are at the greatest risk for acquiring HIV infection are young African American males. And we're talking about young males, you know, between 18 and 30 years old, who engage in sexual practices with other men. That is an actual demographic that is on the rise for HIV infection. And so really, I think you need to look at access for that, for those particular subset of individuals. But really, if you look at the indication for, you know, the use of Truvada, it's for, you know, heterosexual males and females. It's for people that are in monogamous relationships where one person's HIV positive and one person's not. It's for commercial sex workers who are engaging in sexual practices in an unprotected fashion, or they've acquired a bacterial sexually transmitted infection from it, and injection drug users. So it's very hard to carve out just one. But if you look at the epidemiology, the one subsect that's on the rise as far as HIV infection in the United States is that young African-American men who have sex with men population.
You mentioned that in some cases there's stigma associated with taking the drug, with asking a physician about the drug. Why is that?
Yeah, again, I think, you know, when you're talking about how HIV is transmitted, you're talking about, you know, sexual practices. You're talking about use of injection drugs. You know, as you're talking about, in a lot of cases, it's still a disease that disproportionately affects gay males. I think when you're talking about these subjects, these are some subjects that make some people fairly uncomfortable to talk about, and in some cases are very taboo to talk about. And so, you know, I think from a patient to be able to come up to their, to have the comfort level with their provider to talk to them about that, from a provider, you know, they have no problems asking somebody about how their blood pressure is doing or how their diet is, or are they controlling their blood sugars. But they also should be talking to individuals about what sort of sexual practices that they engage in that could be putting them at risk. And that's a very hard conversation, I think, for individuals to have with their providers.
Briefly reading about this, it seems like a contentious issue within the gay community, with people split maybe generationally over whether or not to take it. Briefly, can you outline that?
Yeah, I think you know, some of the people are saying, again, that, and I think mistakenly so, that, you know, oh, now that we've got this drug, you know, we're in the clear here. We don't have to worry about safe sex practices anymore because we can get access, we can get on this medication, and it'll prevent us from getting HIV. But like I said before, all of the data shows that this is not a 100% effective tool. And if you look at all of the guidance out there, what's great about this is, you know, it's kind of designed to, it's trying to engage somebody to see their practitioner once every 3 or 4 months to, you know, have STD testing, to see how things are going, to go through harm reduction strategies and prevention reduction strategies. And so I think the key part that we need to get out about this is that this is just not a single tool, but this is just one tool amongst many that somebody can utilize to cause prevention. And I think that's mistaken.
As we wrap up, what do you hope for in the near-term future in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that the AIDS Research Center of Wisconsin is really interested in doing is we want to take a lead in kind of creating a consortium or a working group of individuals that this affects across the state of Wisconsin. Let's get providers together. Let's get payers together. Let's get patient advocacy groups together. And let's get us all on the same table to talk about how are we going to more effectively utilize this tool. I think it's no doubt that this stuff helps curb HIV transmission. I think it's about getting people comfortable and being able to use it, setting up systems so that they'll be able to pay for it and so patients can be followed up and get the additional counseling and work that they need in order to help them live healthier lives.
Nick, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
We've been speaking with Nick Olson, Director of Clinical Pharmacy at the AIDS Resource Center of Wisconsin, about the use of Truvada to prevent HIV in Wisconsin and around the country.